thanks for downloading the audio podcast of this week's sermon. We pray you'll be blessed and encouraged with the words you hear.
So thank you very much for having me here tonight, and apologies, I was supposed to be here actually sort of the end of April, I think it was, but unfortunately I took the joyous flu and ended up having to postpone. But it's really lovely to be here, and it's lovely to see some familiar faces from whenever Steph and John were here. And yeah, so it's lovely just to see you all. So as Pastor Paul has already given a bit of an intro to me, and I am Rhiannon McKeown, or as my married name, or some people, obviously, Richie. And as Esther has said, I have two boys, Ethan, who's 17, and Isaac, who's 14. I'm a primary school teacher in a little inner city school in Belfast. And yeah, it's a great job. It's a very challenging job, but very, very rewarding. And I've been in that wee school for 20 years now. And yeah, just love it. And as said, we belong to Portadown Elam Church, and I'm really thankful for my my groupie Rosie, who comes and very often is dragged along with me whenever I'm doing anything like this. And as Pastor Paul has said, you know that we have quite a family link within within Elam, and I have been very much blessed with that godly heritage and that godly legacy within my life, and growing up in the things of God and being brought to church. And so that was instilled from a very, very early age, which I'm very, very thankful for. You know, but life wasn't without its challenges. And as many of you, maybe if those of you who know our family and our family network, you will know that whenever just 2 weeks before my seventh birthday, my mum left our house to go and be with someone else. And we ended up, that was a hugely public thing for our family to navigate through, with Dad being a pastor. And about a month later, Mum returned and gathered some more belongings and also took me. So I then ended up going to go and stay with my mum. And so Dad raised Steph and Alistair, and then I was with my mum. And so for a long time during my early childhood, I didn't have that daily presence of my father. In fact, for maybe the guts of a year, maybe before that, I actually didn't even see them for that time. And I have to say that during that time, and not having the daily presence of my dad was incredibly difficult. But you know, we have a good, good father. And I don't want this to sound cliched in any way, but I could tangibly feel, even at that very young age, I could tangibly feel him filling that gap on a daily basis. And I even remember one particular night, and it must have only been about 8 or 9, and lying in bed just crying because I missed them so much, and physically actually feeling God's arms wrap around me. And I know that if you don't know God, or you haven't experienced things like that, you might kind of say, oh, yeah, right. But genuinely, I could feel his arms just wrap around me. And so during the course of that time, as I said, you know, God was, he was very faithful. He was so good to me during that time. And as I, through my teenage years, I gave my life to Jesus then the following summer, I think actually it was, after a little holiday Bible club. And in the holiday Bible club, I guess they'd been talking about, you know, the wages of sin is death, and that if you hadn't asked Jesus into your heart, you would go to hell. And I was so consumed with the fear of either me going to hell or one of my loved ones going to hell, that immediately I rushed home, got onto my knees in my bedroom, and asked Jesus into my heart. And so really my motivation was very much one of fear and the fear of judgment. And I really didn't grasp the depth of God's love and grace at that time. But during then my teenage years, as I began to grow in my relationship with God and began to learn more about him. God really began to reveal more of himself to me. And he began to minister into my heart. And he began to heal my heart. And I guess my story very much is divided into two, because God is, he hasn't just been as God my healer, as my body, which I'll tell you about in a little while, but he was also healer of my heart. And so I suppose if I was to kind of give an overarching theme of my story, it is definitely one of Jehovah Rapha, God my healer. And so during those teenage years, I really began to experience time and time again just God's presence and God's healing power in my heart emotionally. He freed me from so much of guilt and shame and fear that consumed me. And even then, as I went into my early 20s, I had such a fear of even marriage myself. And over time, God really began to break that away and released me from that fear. And so then in 2003, I got married. And shortly afterwards, a couple of years after, we had our first son, Ethan. And then just over three years later, we had Isaac. And I suppose on the outskirts, and a lot of people would have said, oh, you're just a lovely, perfect little family, aren't you? But unfortunately, that wasn't really the case behind closed doors. And without going into any detail or anything like that, you know, God really worked in our lives. But unfortunately, our family broke down in 2011 and our marriage fell apart. And I was left with my two little boys, then aged 5 and 2, to raise myself. And again, that heartache and those feelings of guilt and shame and unworthiness just consumed me completely. I just didn't feel that I was actually worthy of God's love. I didn't feel that I was enough. I didn't feel that I should be even coming into church. And I just felt like such a failure. I felt like I'd let God down so badly because I couldn't keep my marriage together. And I just remember feeling so lost because the future just looked so bleak. Everything around us just seemed to be so broken. And I didn't know, how was I going to cope financially? How was I going to cope raising two boys on my own? How would I even get past all of this emotionally and bring the boys out of this emotionally as well? And I suppose it was what really broke my heart was watching my two young children walking the same heartbreak that I had to as a child as well. But during those years that followed, God became that good, good father to my children. And not only that, he blessed us incredibly in so many ways. He was so faithful. He provided for us in miraculous financial and materially as well. And I often tell the story, I could be here all night telling you story after story of just miraculous ways where God just provided for us. But one that really stood out was whenever Isaac was only 2, and actually I think Steph and John probably were here at the time. And it was a Saturday morning and I was sitting talking to Steph on the phone. And I hadn't said to anybody, but I had £14 left in the bank. And I had no money. My car tax was due and I had no money to pay the car tax. And I thought, if I can't pay my car tax, I can't drive the car and I can't drive to work and then I can't earn money. What am I going to do? And while I was talking to Steph on the phone, Isaac came running in. We toddler, like, waving this white envelope that he'd partially torn open and going, postman, 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 postman. And as I took it from him, it was an unmarked envelope that contained just cash. And as I counted, it was the exact amount of money that I needed to tax my car. And later that morning, I was able to go tax the car. And on numerous occasions, you know, God just provided for us in so many different ways. He provided for us with such great family support, friendships, and people who were there just to speak real godly wisdom into our lives and godly perspective. And one of the real passages of scripture that spoke so deeply and encouraged me and gave me real hope was that in Isaiah 61, and where he promises to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, to release from darkness for the prisoners, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who grieve, to bestow a crown of beauty instead of ashes, an oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of despair. And that phrase, beauty for ashes, was just this mantra for me, constantly saying, you know, he's going to restore beauty for ashes, beauty for ashes. And again, piece by piece, God started to free me and release me from all of those bondages of guilt and shame and fear that consumed me. And he worked so incredibly in my boys, and they both know him and love him, and are beginning to walk their path in serving him as well, which I'm so grateful for. And he's bit by bit started to rebuild our lives, which is just incredible. Maybe you're here tonight and you're struggling with some of those feelings that I had, and that you feel that you're unworthy, that you feel broken and shattered and lacking that hope. Maybe you feel that your future just seems so uncertain. Or maybe you're consumed with guilt and shame, either by maybe choices you've made or choices by that someone else has made. But I want to share a song with you that very much ministered to my heart. This song speaks about us. We are never too far gone to be reached by God. There is nothing too unworthy that God's love cannot reach. There is nothing that is too dirty for him to restore or to make clean.
I see shattered, you see whole, and I see broken, but you see beautiful. Wash me in mercy, and I washed in the blood of your sacrifice. Your blood flowed red and made me white. My dirty rags are purified. I'm clean. Washed in the blood of your sacrifice. Your blood flowed red and made me white. My dirty rags are purified. I'm clean, I'm clean. Whoa. Washed in the blood of your sacrifice. Your blood flowed red and made me white. My dirty rags are purified.
The next part of my story is really where God really became the healer of my physical body. And in February 2018, I woke up very randomly. It was half-term holidays, and I woke up very randomly with numbness in my left leg, and like a pins and needles, all of those kinds of sensations, and it was ice cold, like it had just been put in the freezer. And it just seemed very random to me that I just thought, wonder what's going on here. But after it didn't return after a number of hours, and as the day kind of went on, and with much coaxing, even from my lovely friend Rosie, I went to A&E later that evening to go and get it checked out. And I assumed that it was just something very simple. I had had a previous ankle injury and thought it was just a little nerve that was trapped, and I thought that's all that it really was. But as I was being examined by the doctors, they began to say that no, they felt that it was a neurological issue and that it was much more serious than just the previous injury. And they started throwing out all of these terms like brain and spinal tumours, MS and a possible stroke and all of that. And so they admitted me for further testing. And during that was a Friday evening. And during that night, as I was wheeled up onto the ward, and I lay in the bed and I just started to pray, and I just know that there was just this sense of peace. And I remember just praying and saying, God, I know all of these terms that they're saying. I should be a lot more worried about this. But, you know, God just completely overtook. And he did give me that peace that surpasses all understanding in that moment. And I have to say, I'm not going to say that I was fearless throughout the time that I was ill. I wasn't. And I had to keep handing that over to God. But in that moment and during that week, there, you know, God just filled me with such a peace. And so I had a brain and a spinal MRI scan, and they found a small area of inflammation in the medulla, which is the part that goes into from your spine up into your brain. And because there was one area, they felt that it was due to a viral infection. They didn't know really what the root cause was. And so I was discharged with and referred into neurophysio treatment to teach me how to walk again and to try and regain the strength back into my hands. But over the course of my stay in hospital, the numbness travelled the whole way up my left side and into my left hand and my left arm, to the point where I couldn't even squeeze toothpaste out of a toothpaste tube with my left hand. I couldn't hold the fork to push it into food. I couldn't hold anything of any weight in my left hand. I was walking, my leg just dragged behind me. I couldn't walk for any distance without any crutches or a walking stick. And so I started the neurophysio treatment. And over the course of that year and a half, I did begin to make some steps of progress and get a little bit more strength back into my hand. But being in a school, you're surrounded by germs and sicknesses of all kinds. And unfortunately, every time that I ended up getting a chest infection or a throat infection or a bug or something, I completely relapsed again and went right back to the very beginning. And so it was a real roller coaster of a ride. And that obviously caused like massive day-to-day impact for me looking after the two boys on my own. I also experienced lots of chronic fatigue, migraines and things like that as well. And so that course of a year and a half was just incredibly challenging. But I didn't walk it on my own. And God was there step by step, strengthening me in that. And I know that I felt that through every day as he walked that path with me. And so the physio, because of having the relapses time and time again, the physio, she began to actually prepare me for further investigations. And she was very much sort of trying to prepare me that this looked like it was leading to a diagnosis of MS. And so again, that uncertainty of what my future might look like gripped me again. Would I ever regain the functionality of my left side again? And would I ever walk properly again? And so in the July 2018, during the Wondrous Bible Week, there was a guy who was over from Prayer Storm, James Aladrin, and he was speaking about the story of Joseph and all of the difficulties that Joseph had to walk through in his life and how this was a process that God was bringing him through because he had greater things planned for him. And he made an appeal at the end of that night to people who felt that God was bringing them through a process. And so that night, I very reluctantly, I responded because I knew that God was bringing me through a process. But my reluctance was because it was a thing of pride. You see, everything else that I had navigated through in my life before that, I could paint on this mask and pretend that everything was okay. And nobody would know any different. But this time my weakness was external. This time people could see me and they could see my weakness and it was physical and I hated that because I couldn't hide it. And so very reluctantly, James Aladrin, he asked people to come to the front to be prayed for, and it was the longest walk that I have ever, ever, ever had to make. And honestly, I walked with my head hanging or with my hair hanging over my face, terrified that people would know who I was or that people would see me. And as I got to the front, God really started to do a work in my heart at that point in time. And he said very clearly and spoke into my heart, and he says, Rhiannon, if I choose not to heal you, will you still give me your yes? Will you still serve me? Will you still give me everything? And I stood, and that was the hardest decision that I ever could ever make, because I so wanted to be back to normal. I wanted my healing. People had been praying continuously for me, but nothing was happening. And I just thought, oh, well, is that what you're telling me? Are you not going to heal me, God? And so when I came to the realization that actually the safest place for us is in God's hands and his will, and I just said, well, God, if it is your will that I'm not healed, then okay, I'll give you my yes and I surrender it to you. And that was a daily thing. Every day I had to continuously hand that over to God and say, okay, God, I still serve you. I still give you my yes. But that night as I went home and in my own devotions, I had just started reading Acts. And that night was Acts chapter 3, the story of the lame beggar. And as I started to read it, and for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with the story, there is a lame beggar and he's sitting at the beautiful gate of the temple where people came to come and worship. And he sat there begging for alms or for offerings and money from people who were coming into the temple so that he could buy his food, and that was his provision. And Peter and John, they are coming into the temple and they see the lame beggar and they say, silver and gold have we none, but what we do have we give to you. And in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, rise up and walk. And immediately the lame beggar stands up and he goes running, leaping and praising God into the temple. And so as I read that passage, I kind of thought, oh, okay, God, are you trying to speak to me? What are you trying to say? And I felt God's prompting to go and look at the meaning, the Greek meaning of the beautiful gate. And as I looked it up, it's the Greek adjective that's horaios. And it not only is a descriptive word meaning beautiful, but it also can be used to mean in ripening time or the right time. And as I sat pondering and meditating on this and asking God, well, what are you saying to me here in this? Are you telling me that in your time, in the right time, you're going to heal me or what? And I didn't feel that at that point. I really didn't feel that. It was more God just said, no, I will be all that you need at the right time, and I will provide for you all that you need at that right time. And so I continued on with my treatment with the physio. I continued on going to my appointments and struggling along. People continued to pray. Still nothing happened for my healing. Until June 2019, and I went for my appointment with the physio, and she said, Rhiannon, there's nothing more that I can do for you. I've done everything that we possibly can, and really the prognosis, and I'd been told this by the neurologist, the consultants, by her, my GP, everybody else, they had all reiterated this, that people who suffered from my kind of injury or brain injury or illness, there would be a third of people fully recover, a third of people only partially recover, and a third of people didn't recover at all. And so the physio, she said, look, you're going to be in that middle bracket, I think, that you are only going to have that partial functionality. But there's nothing else I can do. And she said that she'd give me one more appointment in the middle of the August, give me a bit of a break over the summer holidays to see if rest would kind of impact or help strengthen. And so that was fine. And as you can imagine, I came away really very deflated and feeling, okay, this is what the future holds. This is what it looks like. And again, she preempted and said, look, potentially this could mean that there's more investigations that need to happen again. And so that was the Wednesday. On the Sunday, we were in church, and David Legg, who is an itinerant speaker, he came and he was speaking at our church. And lo and behold, what was he speaking on but Acts chapter 3? And as I sat and I sat listening to what he was saying, and I thought, God, are you trying to say something here? Are you actually going to do something? Is this significant? Is it not? And I was very apprehensive because I didn't want to get my hopes up. And I didn't want to be disappointed again, because so many times, and any of you who have experienced illnesses, or even when you are seeking God in prayer for things and the answer doesn't come, and that frustration and the disappointment when the answer doesn't come. And so again, I was so scared that I would be disappointed again. But anyway, I sat and I said, okay, God, whatever you're going to do, I'm open. And so David called a prayer line and he started to pray with people, and I went forward. And David and his son and my son, they were good friends. So we knew, you know, what was kind of happening with me. And He prayed with me, and at the end of the prayer, he says, right, okay, so what do we do to test this? And I kind of looked at him and I said, but I don't feel anything different. I just feel exactly the same. And he says, no, but we need to test it. So I was like, right. And again, that apprehension and that nervousness came over, and I thought, I'm going to be really disappointed here. And God forgive me, I really lacked the faith. I really did at that point. But again, then I thought, right, let's try it. So one of the tests was to put your fingers, he had to put his fingers like this, and I had to squeeze really tightly with his two fingers. But my left hand would never ever squeeze. But as I started to try and squeeze his fingers, it was like a rush came down my arm. And a sensation, and all I can describe it as, it was nearly like some kind of bandage on my arm just released, and the muscles started to work, and I started to squeeze tighter and tighter and tighter onto his fingers, to the point where he then went, no, you have to stop, you're going to break my fingers. And at that point, I was kind of laughing and crying at the same time, and he was laughing, going, oh, right, okay, what's happening here? He says, right, how do we test your leg? How do we test your leg? So I says, well, I haven't been able to weight bear on my leg. I wasn't ever able to balance on my left leg or anything. He says, right, well, try. And immediately I just stood balancing on my left leg for over a minute. And so then he says, right, well, what else can we do? What else can we do? And our platform, it's not dissimilar to this. There's a couple, you know, three steps or so up the side and a bit of a jump here. And I says, well, I'd been on praise and worship team that morning and very visibly struggling, getting up the side, getting up the steps and having to hold on to the wall to kind of get up. And I says, well, I couldn't jump. I couldn't get up without using the steps. And he says, right, well, try it. I'll be behind you. Away you go and try it. And immediately I started just jumping up and down off the steps. A week later, I was doing couch to 5K. And I mean, it was just incredible. And even as a Christian, I have never even visually witnessed a miracle like that, never mind experiencing it. And that afternoon, like, I couldn't wait to actually get on the phone. My dad actually was away on holiday, believe it or not, and I was phoning him on holiday in Spain going, you'll never guess what happened. And was telling him and was telling obviously the rest of my family. And so it was just God's grace and mercy that he would restore that. I mean, that was nothing that man could do. That was nothing on my part. There was nothing that any other medical doctor could do. It was simply by God's grace and mercy that he restored that functionality back again. And so then it came to the time in August to go back to the physio. And I was very apprehensive, let's just say. I was walking in and thinking, she's going to think I am an absolute looper whenever I tell her this. What is she going to say? And so as I sat in the appointment, when she came down to get me from the waiting area, because I didn't have crutches or anything, we were walking up the corridor. I was actually walking faster than what she was walking, and she kept kind of looking sideways at me. And then she sat me down in the rehabilitation suite on the bed, and she said, so what's happened? And I said, well, I don't really know what you're going to think of this, but I'm a Christian. And the Sunday after our last appointment, I was prayed for in church, and I was instantaneously healed. And it just so happened, actually, she says, well, I'm a Christian as well. And she says, right through your treatment, I have been praying for you. And she says, now I pray for all my patients, but she said, I knew there was something here, and I prayed so hard for you. And she started to share healing stories of her own. And she says, okay, right, we're going to prove this. We're going to prove that this is a miracle. And I'm going to test you hard. And she tested me hard. And from not only the tests that she did beforehand at the previous appointment, they rocketed. My scores were off the charts in comparison to what they had been. But she says, Rhiannon, even the discrepancy between my left hand is less dominant. She says, there was only one mark of a discrepancy between my left hand and my dominant hand. And she said, that even in itself is unusual. And a lot of the exercises that she had me do, she said, Rhiannon, there are people who have no physical ailments that would really struggle with that. And she says, I'm writing on the report, miraculous recovery. And so I was discharged from her, and then I was discharged from neurology as well. And so thankful to God, because I have never looked back, and I haven't had any of those difficulties or issues or illnesses. And yeah, it has just been incredible. And so why am I sharing my story? Because we each have stories to share of God's faithfulness and thing as well. But, you know, maybe you're here tonight and you're seeking God for answers to prayer. Maybe you're in that frustrating waiting period. Maybe you're struggling to kind of keep going and asking God. But I want to encourage you, keep going. Keep asking God. Because you don't know when God will actually begin to move. But most of all, in that waiting time, can I encourage you, it's very easy to begin to lose faith. It's very easy to become frustrated and go, I've had enough, and walk away. But can I encourage you that in the midst of that waiting time, keep going, keep trusting God. Trusting him that yes, maybe someday he will restore or he will give you the answers to your prayer. But in the meantime, trust him that he is faithful. Trust him that he is good, that his actual character, his essence is good and is love. And trust him in the midst of that, that even in the waiting, he will be your provision. He will be your faithful father. And so this song is a song called Unredeemed. And it's just a real song that has ministered to my heart in the midst of that. That when we hand over our shattered lives, when we hand over all of our circumstances, in the midst of those difficult times, they are the times that we experience God's grace like never before. And not only that, he promises that they might not be restored or fulfilled the way that we see them as being fulfilled and restored or answered. But he promises that he still will do it. But we trust that his ways are higher than our ways. We trust in him that he sees the big picture, that he knows our best, and he has a plan for our lives. He has a plan to prosper us and not to harm us. A plan for a future and a hope. And so let me just leave this song with you as well.
The cruelest word, the coldest heart, the deepest wound, the endless dark, the lonely ache, the burning tears, the bitter nights, the wasted years. Life breaks and falls apart, but we know these are where grace is, soon to be so amazing. It may be unfulfilled, it may be unrestored, but when anything that's shattered is laid before the Lord, just watch and see, it will not be unredeemed. For every choice that led to shame, and all the love that never came. For every vow that someone broke, and every life that gave up hope, we live in the shadow of the fall. But the cross says these are all places where grace is soon to be so amazing. It may be unfulfilled, it may be unrestored, but when anything that shatters
to this week's podcast. If you would like any more information, have a look at our website at www.ballymoneyelam.com.